Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
To go. 610, how you doing? No place to go. Mike, do we know the name of this song? We were talking about this yesterday. No place to go. Mike Jacobson live from the producer's booth. No
place yeah, it's Down the Road.
By?
CDC.
Crank it up. Yes, I'm going. Goodbye, baby. Yes, I'm going. Maybe my new all-time favorite song, Down the Road by, what is it, CDC? The Center for Disease Control? That's the name of the band? 6:11, it's fine outside. It's not warm, but it's fine. 50 or something today. Is it going to rain? We're done with the rain, aren't we?
No, we're going to have a slight chance for some rain later on today. Very slight chance.
Boy, this rain's just nonstop.
But 70 on Friday or Saturday?
Yeah, close to 70.
But snow tomorrow.
Snow?
Yeah, that's what they're saying.
Snow?
Yeah,
snow.
Light snow. Yeah. Blustery and cold. Oh, boy. Is
snow?
It April?
And a lake flood.
What? What?
And a typhoon.
Lake flood.
All right, both of you. Just pipe down. Hey, control yourselves. At 6:11, let's do the top six at six.
Now it's time to move on to a little something we call...
The Steve Cochran Show presents the top six at six.
That's the best number I've heard yet.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yes.
Six.
Lucky guess.
My favorite number is six.
The top six at six on 720 WGN.
Well, as usual, we got a lot of Washington / political news. Nobody's more sick of it than I am, but let's dive in with a positive story about President Donald J. Trump. You hear what I said? Let's dive into it with a positive story about President Donald J. Trump.
You did say positive, right?
Yes.
Okay.
He is donating his first 3 months' presidential salary. What's the president make? 420? 430? Something like that?
In the fours.
Yeah. So this particular check is about $78,000.
After taxes?
Yes. Yeah. After taxes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's giving it to the National Park Service,
mm-hmm.
which is good.
Very nice.
I'm gonna buy a couple of benches, get a bear a jar of honey. I mean, there's something going on there for the National Park Service.
I was very surprised, weren't you? The National Park Service, after his outburst over the crowd size and
I hadn't thought about
up.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Well, he always enjoyed the parks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if you know this, but President Trump, when he was a boy, was actually a guide at Yellowstone. Yeah, he had the big hat. You didn't know that?
I thought you were going to say Central Park.
Is that true?
No, I mean,
no.
And I don't make stuff up, but that time I did. The other stuff going on politically today is, a mixed bag. There's a big story that Donna Rice, the Obama NSA National Security Advisor, unmasked a bunch of Trump names during the transition period. This is a deep in the weeds political story. Little tough to understand. It basically comes down to this, because this is what we do now. If you hate Donna Rice and you hate Democrats, this is your birthday, because now you've got something to muddy the waters on the Trump-Russia story. However, it's something that should be investigated. It has nothing to do with the Trump-Russia story, and the Trump-Russia story still ought to be the president's number one priority. It's not. But it should be. And then the final thing, and this, again, goes to whoever's going to play these parts in the movie. The founder of Blackwater, a private security company, met in the Seychelles Islands in the Indian Ocean in January with representatives of Vladimir Putin on behalf of Donald J. Trump in an effort to set up a back-channel communications line to Russia. If you're about to be the president of the United States, why do you need a back channel line to Putin? Pick up the phone.
And he is a relative, is he not?
Betsy DeVos's brother.
Betsy DeVos, right.
Yeah, the education secretary.
Oops, and he founded Blackwater.
And he founded Blackwater. That's right.
Kind of smells, doesn't it?
It's just all going to be in the movie. Next. Here's a fun little story. As Senator McCain called him, a little fat kid running North Korea. Crazy little fat kid. Kim Jong-un, a defector last night, was talking to our old friend Lester Holt doing NBC News from South Korea, just across the border. And that defector has some ties to the upper echelons of the Korean government, the UNS.
The UNS, right.
And said that it's very likely that Kim Jong-un would use nuclear weapons if they are perfected in his time.
Mm-hmm.
But he's ready to go with that. That's not a good story. That's not what we want to hear.
Nope.
The crazy little fat kid is trouble. And when the Chinese president comes to Mar-a-Lago this weekend, it's good that they won't be golfing because they've got lots to talk about.
Big time. They said that they have, didn't he say they have 8 nuclear weapons at least?
Yeah. The question is, how effective are they? Are they the Ronco version?
Yes.
Right? Or are they something that's been developed by appropriate science while you starve the people in your country? Next. The National Hockey League is officially passed on the 2018 Winter Olympics. That's fine. I'm fine with that.
Are you really? I like hockey in the Olympics.
Well, there'll still be hockey
there, but
it'll
be amateurs.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't like the big interruption in the NHL season.
Yeah, you shut down the league for a month.
For a month of February.
Yeah.
I think it's better.
It should always be amateurs anyway. Not people who get paid to play sports.
Yeah, I don't, it's fine by me.
See, it's kind of cool, though, seeing Kane and, you know, play for our country.
Did you pay that much attention to it?
I did. I love the Olympics, though, so.
It was cool, but at what cost? Is the question.
Yeah, a month off.
Yeah.
You know, and then somebody gets hurt in the games.
And it's the time of the year when people are paying attention to the game.
Yeah.
And a lot of players are upset about this.
And I don't want anybody to get hurt.
Ever?
That's my only condition.
Emotionally or physically?
Both.
Okay, just
both
checking.
Very important.
Next! North Carolina won the national championship last night. I didn't even make it 2 minutes past halftime. And it looked like Gonzaga might, go on a run, and they were shut down in the second half. However, I read a bunch of stuff this morning that said there was some bad refereeing. Is that just complaining, Dave, or was it?
I think it was inconsistent refereeing, yeah, and I think that's been a story throughout the tournament. But I don't think that Gonzaga could really blame officials for losing the game. They had some shots they missed. And they had the lead when you went to sleep, Steve. They were up by 3 at halftime.
Yeah.
But they had their chances in the last couple of minutes, couldn't get a shot to go down, turned it over too much. And look, North Carolina's really good. Two really good teams. And just right at the end, North Carolina was able to pull away.
It was rigged.
It was?
No, but I lost the office pool, so I'm going to say that.
If you weren't into the one shining moment at the end, Deadspin has a feature up this morning called Dumb Shining Moment, where they have the lowlights of the tournament. And finally, I'm going to combine items 5 and 6 here. A couple married for 71 years, died 4 minutes apart this week.
Mm.
We hear about these stories, you know, quite a bit. You know, 71 years, side by side. Never had a fight. No, of course they had a fight. But they died 4 minutes apart.
It's kind of like The Notebook.
Is it sad? Is it romantic? It's both, I guess. Huh?
I think it is both, yeah.
Yeah. And we'll tell you a little bit more about this story later. But happy 110th birthday to a beautiful lady from Carroll Stream, who had her 110th birthday party this week, had her family recount 110 of her favorite memories.
Oh,
isn't that nice?
How cute is that?
Very nice.
Yeah, that's very nice.
Two Cubs World Series championships.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know why? She's a World Series hog.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Save some for the rest of us.
Yeah, exactly. So there you go. That's your top 6 at 6:18. We will get to, is Nick joining us this morning? Yes? No? No, that's only Thursdays, isn't it? What show am I doing?
Nick will be on with us Thursday. Kid of the Week today. We have Kid of the Week today. We're going to have Ryan Nobles on today.
Yeah, I got to soak my head for a few more minutes. Good luck to them. We should send them something. What do you want to send them?
We should send them fruit. You know how App sent you fruit?
Yeah.
We should send them a big fruit basket.
Okay. Will you do it? I'll give you the money.
Yes. I'm going to go on right now and do it.
Our friend Ryan Nobles from CNN later. All right, so as briefly as possible, here's the news story you'll hear a lot about today, and it's confusing. And I just made it more confusing. It's not Donna Rice, it's Susan Rice. Donna Rice. You know what? It'd be cooler if it was Donna Rice. That would make the whole thing even wackier. Donna Rice, Gary Hart's old girlfriend, is unmasking Trump transition team members. So thank you, Texter, for pointing that out. But it's Susan Rice. Mm-hmm. Susan Rice was the woman in front of the whole Benghazi mess. that went out on the Sunday morning talk shows and said it was the video. Of course, we know it wasn't. So again, I'll go back to what I said before. If you think Susan Rice is a liar, and if you think that the Obama administration and Barack Obama was the evil incarnate, I mean, you're going to live in that zone. Mm-hmm. If you think Trump is a liar and you think he's the worst thing that ever happened, you're going to live in that zone. Mm-hmm. I would just suggest that all of these things that need to be investigated for people be investigated in their time, and that we stop saying one's more important than the other, because we know which one's the most important, and that is that a foreign government, Russia, infiltrated our election process, and that has to be investigated. Those involved have to be discovered. And that's the biggest issue. That's the number one issue related to this presidency. That's the number one issue everybody should be concerned with. It doesn't change the fact that Donald Trump's president. It doesn't change the fact that he won the election. What it changes is that we cannot allow a foreign entity to be involved. And what I'd like answers to is the same thing I've always wanted. And what I don't understand is the same thing I still don't understand. Why is Donald Trump concerned about Susan Rice and Hillary Clinton in April of his first year in the White House and not concerned about Vladimir Putin effing with the election?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Those are fair questions.
Very fair. Put this in perspective. You advertise for LifeLock. You don't want somebody hacking into your accounts, your right. email. If you, Steve Cochran, hacked into the United States government computer, there would be an investigation. There would be an issue. You'd probably be in jail.
Yeah.
The fact that Russia, without question, somehow compromised and hacked into our system. Whether that influenced the election or not is neither here nor there, because it's likely that they didn't. But they did hack into our system,
and that's
a problem.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with Trump winning. He
right.
won.
Right.
The only one that doesn't want to accept Trump's win is Trump. He's the one that keeps bringing up Hillary Clinton. Trump won. He's the president. Larry King weighed in on the Trump presidency. Jake, give me cut five. Larry King weighed in on the Trump presidency, and Larry King's been friends with Trump for years. Mm-hmm. Here's Larry King's thoughts on how Donald J. Trump's doing.
It's almost funny to run the Environmental Protection Agency. He hires an anti-environment guy. To run this Secretary of Education, he hires someone who doesn't like education, doesn't like public schools. That's weird, man. There's something crazed about it. And a lot of his opinions, he cuts State Department by 32%. It's like he gets us out of climate change. Who doesn't notice climate change? Come on. It's obviously caused by carbon dioxide. Come on. The Earth's changed. Miami Beach is not going to exist after 2100. But what's happened is now he's learned the far right ain't going to go with him all the way. They don't go with him on health care. So I think Donald's learned a lesson.
Larry.
Now he'll entertain Democrats. I think he'll hopefully... he'll change. He's not what they make, but I got to admit that so far, this is one of the most ridiculous presidencies I have ever seen.
That's Donald Trump's friend, Larry King.
King.
Yeah. It's like Yoda. Six, except Yoda's taller. 628. We'll come back, get your big story next on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show presents The Kid of the Week.
God bless the child.
Allstate believes good things start young. And good starts young in great young kids. Works towards inspiring the next generation of leaders. Reach the full potential, make the world a better place through service. In that spirit, Allstate Good Starts Young Initiative can help you recognize a kid that goes above and beyond. Nominate a youth for the Allstate Kid of the Week. A kid you know could be featured here on the Steve Cochran Show, win great prizes. And you can go on to WGNradio.com/contest to submit an entry for, I'm having difficulty speaking, aren't I? For a child between 9 and 18 that you think should be Allstate Kid of the Week. And then every Tuesday we do that here. Okay, so yes. Would you like to meet today's Kid of the Week?
I would love to meet today's
Are
Kid of the Week.
Are you sure?
Yes.
You're positive. Okay, well, let's do that. Let's meet Lucas. Good morning, Lucas. How are you?
I'm all right. How about you?
I'm doing fine. Wojnicki?
Yes.
All right, Lucas Wojnicki. How old are you, Lucas?
I'm 14 years old.
All right, you have a job?
No, I do not.
You're just living off your parents, huh, Lucas?
Yeah, sure.
Sponging off the family. Here's the nominee as it was put up to us. To whom this may concern, I'm Lauren Smith, the teacher for Lucas Wojnicki at Marlow Middle School. I believe Lucas is a young student who's demonstrated compassion towards others, and specifically another student in the school. His best friend just recently went through heart surgery. Lucas made it his idea to get the students to wear red for the following day in honor of him, and he then went to the teachers of the team and asked them permission to get everyone together for a team picture to send to his friend. Well, that's a cool idea, dude. Very nice.
Yeah.
And this is your pal?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He had heart surgery a couple, like a week or and a half ago.
How's he doing?
He's doing all right.
You know, I mean, that's a tough road, but I suppose because he's young, he's probably going to be fine, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's better when you're young instead of you're old.
Yeah.
So.
So did anybody give you grief about the shirts?
No, nobody actually did. I just walked around. I you know, because he's done a lot for me in the past, so I just wanted to repay him back. And I was like, you know, everybody wear red. And then a lot of kids ended up wearing red, and we took a picture.
How many people were in the picture?
Like 65, 70 kids.
That's pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah.
It's a cool idea, Lucas. Very cool idea. Sandberg, what did you want to say?
One cute detail about this, when I called his mom, you know, she didn't know he had been nominated, and she asked why he was nominated, and I told her, and she knew that they had done the T-shirts, but Lucas never told her it was his idea or...
No, you're kidding. You didn't even tell your mother?
No.
Lucas?
Oh, no.
We lose Lucas.
He didn't tell anybody.
Lucas is gone.
He's tired. It's early.
But you know what? Think about that. That's a lot of people to have. You know, if I say to you guys,
here's what I like about
this
story. If you're a 14-year-old girl, a 14-year-old girl running around to all her girlfriends, you go, oh, yeah, that'd be fun. That'd be fun. That'd be fun.
Uh-huh.
You get 65, 70 dudes.
I know
they're not all guys, but you get a bunch of guys at 14 or 15 to all wear the same red T-shirt without going, oh, leave me alone, man.
Literally, it's hard enough getting you guys to getting like five of us on
right.
the same page.
Look how long it takes to dress up. You're trying to get us to dress up for Halloween.
I know, seriously.
So
this kid, I shouldn't say kid, young adult, is a motivator.
Yeah, I think so, too. Lucas, sorry we lost you there somehow. But anyway,
yeah.
I think you're a fine example. Of Kid of the Week, and I hope your buddy's great and keep doing great things, man. Spread the word. Get your friends involved.
Yeah.
And I'm very pleased to hear none of your friends gave you any grief about this.
Yeah.
All right. Anybody want to say hi to?
Not really, no. I mean, no, not really.
No teachers you want to suck up to?
Maybe Miss Forrester, okay. Miss Smith, and Miss Ross.
Okay. What Mr. classes?
Wilford.
What classes are those?
Math, literacy, social studies, science. Miss Martin, she's another literacy teacher.
Got marginal grades in there? You're trying to get a little boost? Is that what you're doing here?
I hope.
Nah, you're all right, dude, and I appreciate it. What do you want to be when you grow up?
I want to be a professional baseball player when I grow up, but it's probably not going to happen.
Hey, whoa, no. There's no probably not going to happen. Lucas,
it's a hard thing to do.
Come on, you're a motivator.
It's a very hard thing to do, but you went out, you motivate people.
Right.
You got to play like that's your dream, that's your goal. Maybe it doesn't work out, maybe it does. But I'll tell you, the only way it's going to work out is if you go, this is what I want to do, man.
Mm-hmm.
What position do you play?
I'm a catcher and I'm a second baseman.
A better glove or better stick?
Better glove.
Okay. There's a lot of room for that in the bigs.
Yes, there is.
Dave, you know guys at the Cubs. They don't talk to me anymore, but you know guys at the Cubs. Make a deal for Lucas.
Well, I think Lucas doesn't need any. I think he's going to be fine. He doesn't need our help. He's sounds like he's got it all together.
Right.
And look, these guys who are in the major leagues, Lucas, they came from somewhere.
Yeah.
They were your age. They said, hey, I want to be a major league baseball player.
That's
and they got
exactly
there.
Right.
So there you go.
They did.
You got to believe, Lucas. The way you believe in your friend, you got to believe in you. Lucas, do you believe in Lucas?
Yes, I do.
All right, that's what I want to hear.
Lucas, it's hard enough to get 70 people to do what you did.
That's right.
And we went the first interview when you're in the bigs.
Or the second. Or, we'll take either.
Yeah.
Listen, I got Lou Malnati's Pizza and an Amazon gift card for you.
That's awesome. Thank you.
All right, thanks, buddy. Have a great day at school. Hold on. Nice young man.
A good
He's
kid.
Cute.
Right?
He's fantastic.
I mean, what I said, though, Dave, like if I went up to Dave and said, Dave, let's wear matching tank tops, you know, that wouldn't go over great.
No.
You know why? Because one of you guys would forget.
Yeah.
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 Plus, I don't wear tank tops. No. I mean, there's a lot of holes in that plan.
Yeah, boys are so cool at that age. They just do it. They don't care. Like, girls have to whisper and talk about it for weeks and weeks. Boys will just like, okay, wear a red T-shirt tomorrow. No problem.
I think it's harder to get guys to do it.
You know why boys would do it?
No. I raised two boys, you know?
Yeah,
like,
but you know why boys? No, but here's why boys would do it. Because your mother told you to do it.
Right. Yeah, but this mother didn't even know.
No, but I'm saying Lucas had that kind of sway over his friends.
Yes.
The only reason a bunch of 14 and 15-year-old boys are putting on the same color T-shirt for a picture is because Lucas told them to.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Or they, at another day, they had some a woman in their life, their moms, saying, yes, you are going to wear it.
Yes.
Put it on for the picture.
Yeah, but they did it for his friend.
They did it for Lucas.
Yeah. Well, the heart transplant.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, and the
definitely.
Kid, yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. So God bless him, and we hope he's doing great. All right, 6:52. I like this story. Merle, is it Phillips, right? Wasn't it Merle Phillips from Carol Stream?
Merle Phillips.
A lot of you listening may know the lovely and talented Merle. She turned 110. When was her birthday? Monday?
Yesterday? Birthday was Monday, yeah.
Okay. She has a giant print Bible and a magnifying glass within easy reach. She's 4 feet 10 inches tall. She has a spiral notebook, and she writes by hand every day. She says, if I don't get up to write, then I forget. You know, my grandmother lived to be 101.
Mm-hmm.
And before she passed, she told me she was writing things down every day to keep her mind active and all that. She would even write the weather forecast down.
Yeah.
You know, like diary things.
Yeah. Like a journal, yeah.
Yeah, kind of just yeah. So it's a good idea. But she's not just any writer. Phillips, who turned 110, well, this is April 2nd, but you said April 3rd. Well, you know, either one. Oh, give her, you know, for, you turn 110, you get credit for both days.
Yeah, and she celebrated Monday, so.
She writes mostly when she wants to, and she rarely experiences writer's block. She's written 11 books.
How about that?
All self-published, mostly autobiographical. She started writing in her 70s, and she's never stopped.
And she's working on her 12th book.
That's cool. Nothing but cool.
Right.
She says, if I have something to write about, I write. She lives in a Belmont Village assisted living facility in Carol Stream. She said, if I don't have something to write, I don't. I love this. She goes, I don't write every day because sometimes I don't have the time.
She's busy.
I got stuff to do, man.
Social events. A lot of stuff going on.
Phillips says she knows she's not an exceptional writer. She says, I'm not smart enough to write fiction. Sometimes she says I'll ramble. Her tangents about the people who've taken advantage of her through the years can run several pages. I like that she's working out that, though. Working out the anger in therapy.
How about that?
But her stories offer a remarkable window into a time almost no one living today remembers. Some hardship, some perseverance, occasional heartbreak, unquenchable curiosity. She talks about horse and buggy rides, houses without running water, electricity, and bedrooms so cold, water would freeze in your drinking glass. She was born on a farm in Kingston, Arkansas in 1907. 4 months after her birth, her dad died. She says, my father was thin and puny. Now, there's a word you don't hear much anymore, puny.
Yeah.
Puny is a good older person's word.
Mm-hmm.
He drank some contaminated water. He got typhoid fever. She writes of feeding farm animals, gathering eggs for her mom, who lived into her 90s, and spying through a keyhole on her mother and her new boyfriend.
Funny.
Hey, Merle, what are you doing? And she recalls with amazement watching the sculptors, listen to this, chip away at what would become the stone faces of Mount Rushmore.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's cool.
How cool is that?
Her books offer wisdom called from the extraordinary long life she's lived. Don't blow up and say regretful things you can't take back. Keep your cool. A soft answer takes away wrath. That's pretty genius.
Very, very much so. And one of my favorite parts of her story is that women rarely went to college in, you know, the early 1900s. She got a bachelor's degree from Buena Vista College in Iowa, and she had a triple major.
How about that?
Math, psychology, and education.
How about that?
It's really cool.
Good for her. Merle Phillips, she was married for almost 31 years, and there's much, much more to her story. That's a Sun-Times piece I'm reading from, but several people wrote about her for obvious reasons. She turned 110 yesterday, so happy birthday to her.
Happy birthday.
I'm going to take her dancing. I'm going to pick her up and take her dancing.
She could teach you a few moves.
She probably could. I don't know, if she has time.
Dance moves.
Got to see if I could work it out in her schedule.
Right.
Hey, Merle, it's Steve. We going to go dancing? Well, not this week.
I'm busy.
But let's send Merle something. We can get her. We'll figure this out. I don't know how much she gets out anymore, but she'd probably love Mary Poppins, wouldn't she?
I think she would.
Right. And we could send her a Sweet Alley Spring Treat Box with sweet and savory baked goods. They're in Hinsdale and Glenview and taking orders for your Easter celebrations. Details at sweetalis.com. And the Mercury Theater Chicago box office, 773-325-1700 for Mary Poppins, playing at the Mercury Theater through May 28th. So there you go. Happy birthday to you. Coming up on 657, more of the Steve Cochran Show next on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Today, we're considering the nomination of Judge Neil Gorsuch.
My conscience will not allow me to ratify the majority leader's actions. Not last year, not this year. I will not, I cannot support advancing this nomination.
Bottom line is, I don't think Judge Garland was treated different or unfairly than what y'all would have done.
I cannot support this nomination.
And let me just say this to your faces. If the roles were reversed, I don't believe one minute that you would have given the accommodation you're asking us to have given Garland. It's just laughable to me.
It's laughable that there's no agreement that could be struck between either party on anything of significance at any time. And you should be sick of it. Ryan Noble standing by from CNN. We'll get back to the court thing in just a second. But the issue of the day today, Ryan, and good morning. How are you?
Great. Great, Steve. How are you?
I am fine. Nice to have you back on. The muddying of the water today comes through Susan Rice, the former Obama NSA. Is there an easy way to explain this story?
Well, there's an easy way to explain it, but the problem is that it's been so caught up in the politics of it that depending on the prism of your perspective, you're going to view it in a certain way. And CNN's been very careful in our reporting. Jim Sciutto, our national security affairs correspondent, has been working on this pretty diligently. And basically the way Jim is reporting it is that there is a potential that there were members of the Trump transition team that were unmasked during some investigations. But unmasking is not necessarily uncommon, and it requires a legal process. It needs, sign-offs by many different branches of the government before it happens. It's not necessarily leaking, and it doesn't necessarily mean that someone's the target of an investigation. But what it does is it provides more fodder for Donald Trump and his team to, as you say perfectly, muddy the waters when it comes to this investigation. Even Devin Nunes, who's the House Intel Chair, has said repeatedly that the information that he's uncovered, which you could deduce is connected to this, has nothing to do with Russia. So, but yet it's all part of this big investigation into how much Russia interfered in the American election. And, you know, Steve, I always go back to this. You know, the average American is probably starting to have their heads spin around in a number of different directions trying to keep track of all of this. And at some point, they're just going to throw their hands up and say, I don't know what to think anymore.
Yeah, there's a lot of that that's already going on. And Trump has made a career out of this is long before he was president going, you're accusing me of lying. You're accusing me of lying. Hey, look over there. Squirrel. Mm-hmm. You know, there's something else to distract people from. So this is his move. And this is the administration's move. The problem with it is it devalidates the investigation that should go on into leaking and surveillance. And but frankly, there's no bar, including, in my opinion, all of our rights to privacy. There's no bar that equals finding out what Russia did, how they did it, and who was involved. And all I want is this president to stand up and say, that's my priority, too. And he continues to refuse to do it.
Well, and I think, too, what even some Republicans in the Senate have said repeatedly is that a fair and appropriate investigation has the opportunity to clear Donald Trump from this cloud.
Of course it does.
Right. If you allow a robust bipartisan investigation into Russia's role in interfering in the election, and you get Republicans and Democrats to agree when they look at the evidence that and let's say hypothetically you come up with the conclusion that yes, Russia tried like heck to get involved in this election, and maybe they even did try and get Trump people involved in it. But the Trump people at the end of the day, at least the ones close to the president, weren't involved. Wouldn't that be better for him as president? Because this situation has dogged his campaign so, or his administration so much in the early days wouldn't it make it easier for him to have some sort of clearing of his name and clearing of his associates' names so that he can go about the business of actually doing the people's work?
Imagine how hard he could run with that.
Mm-hmm.
If there was an acquittal of all of these charges, and it turns out the Trump people had nothing to do with it, his popularity would shoot through the roof. They'd be able to do all the touchdown dances and mocking they want. So the only reason that you can logically assume that he doesn't want an investigation is he knows that something will be found. How could you come with any other conclusion than that?
Well, you know, Steve, I push back on that a little bit because I think part of it, and you can, if you kind of look back at the way he responds to all of this, it isn't even so much about being connected to the Russians. I think he's very concerned about the delegitimization of his win. You know, he doesn't want people to think in any way, shape, or form that he didn't beat Hillary Clinton. He has a real problem with the idea that he didn't win the popular vote. That's why he throws out all these unsubstantiated claims about the popular vote being a part of voter fraud. I think that it's almost, a kind of an inferiority complex to a certain extent.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
Even if he's not involved with Russia, if he concedes that Russia, with some degree of success, tried to intervene in the American election, that somehow makes his presidency not as legitimate. And I think that's at least part of why he's pushing back so hard on this idea that Russia was involved in any way, shape, or form.
Ryan, I always said it was a weird insecurity. Playing the devil's advocate, I think the Susan Rice situation, I think you can argue that she was the former NSA under then President Obama, and if she's asked to do something, she goes ahead and does it. And then we had all kinds of issues with the NSA allegedly spying on people and people worried about their invasion of privacy. But I too maintain that if Donald Trump was spied on, that if he has nothing to hide, what's the problem? In fact, that could almost be an advantage, a feather in his cap. Yeah, oh, I was spied on. Look at this. But I don't think that's the case. But if he has nothing to hide, what's the big deal?
Right. I know. I guess I always get a little bit nervous about this idea that, well, you know, just investigate me because I've got nothing to hide. Because we've seen before examples of investigations that start and they start going down a road. Mm-hmm. And if you've got a prosecutor with an agenda, he can somehow put together a set of facts that make someone look guilty. And, of course, if you remember, I mean, Bill Clinton is the best example of this because they started an investigation into Whitewater and they ended up on Monica Lewinsky and he ended up impeached. So and there was never anything, conclusive discovered about Whitewater. So I can understand why, you know, you're going to push back a little bit on a robust investigation because you never know where it may lead. But, your point is a valid one, at least in the appearance of the American people. They're wondering, and let's not forget the hypocrisy of Donald Trump, that he's the one that throughout the campaign just relentlessly attacked Hillary Clinton for every little aspect of her role in the email server situation in Benghazi. And both her and he and Michael Flynn said that if you request immunity, then you must be guilty, essentially. So, you know, there is two sides to this, but I think the overarching issue that we can't forget is how long have we been doing this interview? We're not talking about healthcare. We're not talking about infrastructure.
No.
We're not talking about this huge summit he has with China this week. And I understand why, because this is the dominating issue of this administration up until this point.
And by the way, it's the dominating issue because the Trump White House makes it the dominating issue. So if everybody wants to scream, CNN continues to bring this up, or we bring it up, or whoever brings it up. This was something that was started yesterday on the little cute Fox Morning Donald Trump show. And then the Trump White House went with it and made it their number one priority throughout the day. They're not crafting a message about anything they're doing.
I mean, the president himself, I mean, if you analyze his tweets, and that's a big part of my job is analyzing his tweets, he tweets about Russia and this investigation and wiretapping more than he tweets about infrastructure and health care. And I mean, he does tweet about those things a fair amount, but you know, in aggregate, he's talking about this as much as we are, and so it's impossible for us to ignore it.
So there may or may not be something to the Susan Rice story. Yes, that should be looked at. She had a right to, as NSA, to go ahead and unmask, reveal some names within a small circle, how they got leaked to the Washington Post. All of that's a fair investigation. Surveillance is a fair question. All of that is. But none of it is important as the Russian question. All right, can you hang with us for 1 second? We got to get a traffic report.
Yeah.
Ryan Nobles. More with Ryan Nobles from CNN in just a sec. I think we found another window of insanity in Sandberg.
An Another one?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How many windows are there?
Well, there's a lot. We're going to need more Windex. Ryan Nobles from CNN rejoins us now. Good morning, Ryan. And we were talking.
Good morning.
We were talking about the Supreme Court at the top of this segment. The Democrats, there's no road that ends well for the Democrats here. So why are they fighting this so hard?
I wonder the same thing, Steve. It doesn't really make much sense because he's going to end up on the court regardless of how much they battle back on this. And what you're doing now is you're altering the rules of the Senate for years to come. And, you know, that's going to make their lives difficult when it comes to a myriad of issues. And what could make their lives even more difficult is when perhaps an even more controversial Supreme Court nominee is put up in the event that Donald Trump has the opportunity to put another nominee on the court. But I think it is kind of an example right now of just how polarized things are in Washington. And I think Democrats in many ways view Donald Trump as a wounded animal, and they do not want to give him an inch on in any way, shape, or form, because when they go back to their home state, if they are seen aligned with Donald Trump in any way, shape, or form, it could hurt them politically. Politicians, as long as I've been covering them, I've noticed that they don't really think long term. They think in the very much in the here and now. So even though rewriting the filibuster rules is something that could be a problem for senators on both sides of the aisle for a long time to come, they see what's happening right this moment, what people are telling them in their home states right now, and they react accordingly. And it's clear that these Democrats all kind of got in a room together and decided this is what we've got to do, and we're going to stand up and try and put this last-ditch effort to prevent Neil Gorsuch from getting on the court as more of just a public relations show, because it's not in any way, shape, or form going to stop him from being the next Supreme Court nominee by the end of the week.
But don't they have to do that, Ryan? I was talking to Steve up here to try and block the nomination, because I know, you're right, the adult thing to do would be to say, you know what, he's going to be on the court, just let it happen, and we won't try and filibuster or anything like that. But then they lose face with their constituents and their people, because Mitch McConnell did the same thing last year.
Yeah, but that's what Ryan is saying he's hearing, but here's the problem. If you change the rules where you need a simple majority to confirm the next judge, Donald Trump could nominate a judge that simply slides in under Republican votes who's got some pretty hardcore views. Now you're changing the face of the Supreme Court for who knows how long, which changes lives and laws for everybody. It's a big deal.
Right.
And essentially what you've done is you've slid the standard by which you're going to take this dramatic stand. So, you know, right now you've got Neil Gorsuch, who I'm sure is conservative, but seems to be, by all accounts, a reasonable human being who has the credentials to be the next nominee for the Supreme Court.
Completely
also,
agree.
He's replacing Antonin Scalia, who is, by all accounts, one of the most conservative jurists to ever sit on the Supreme Court. Now, what happens if, for instance, Ruth Bader Ginsburg's seat opens up later in Donald Trump's presidency, one of the most liberal members of the court, and then Donald Trump appoints the replacement to Ruth Bader Ginsburg with someone who is an arch conservative, who's even further to the right than Neil Gorsuch? If you've already established the fact that it only takes 51 votes to get across, you know, when Democrats start to cry about this nominee being too extreme, when you tell me that Neil Gorsuch is too extreme, when he has the credentials that he does and he's replacing a conservative, when you make that same argument for an ultra-conservative replacing an ultra-liberal, it's just going to fall flat. It's not going to – essentially what you filibuster for is to, you know, scare someone on the other side that, listen, I'm taking a dramatic stand here, so you guys need to alter your course. So if you're not going to do that, you know, the next time around, it's going to fall flat. I think the same argument should be made for the way that Democrats mercilessly hammered George W. Bush during his time and Mitt Romney when he ran. And now you've got Donald Trump here. When you made these extremist claims about former Republicans who really, when along the ideological spectrum, are not as extreme as you painted them, you set a precedent going further on that lessens those attacks when they may actually make a little bit more sense.
And the hypocrisy, this is why Congress has a 9% approval rating. Foot fungus is more favorable than Congress. But Harry Reid changes the rules. And then you get payback from Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell changes the rules, and you get payback from Democrats, and the public isn't served.
No, exactly. And you know, how if they can't agree on this, look, the guy's going to get on the court. If they can't agree on this, and it used to be not very long ago unless the nominee was super controversial, they slid in easily with the 60-vote minimum threshold. So when you're telling me that they can't agree on this, how on earth are they going to agree on a health care package? How on earth are they going to agree on some sort of infrastructure reform? How on earth are they going to agree about tax reform? I mean, is this what it's going to be like in Washington forever, that, you know, you're just going to try a majority party rule? I mean, there aren't the country is not so strong to one side or the other that you're ever going to have a Congress where there are enough members of one party to actually get anything done. So at some point, a group of these guys are going to have to look at each other and say, okay, we've got to start making concessions. We've got to relearn the word compromise, or Washington's just going to continue to be this cesspool, and the lack of trust in this institution is just going to continue to fade.
And for every hardcore Democrat and that hates Trump, and every hardcore Republican that hates everything about Obama or liberals in general, listening, going, nope, my way or the highway, you guys lose. Yeah. The far right and the far left are not the answer. All right, Ryan, nice job as always. Fix this whole problem and a few more for us, and we'll check in with you.
It's not my job to fix it. It's just my job to tell you about it.
Well, fix it, and we'll take credit, and you know, even though you did the work.
All right, guys.
It's a great Ryan Nobles from CNN, 731. Big story next, 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Hicks wanted to drive on Williams. Puts it in. Oh, wow.
That's what you need from that guy if you're Gus.
Comes in. Blocked by Meeks.
Right up and ahead for Jackson. And he takes it down for the 5-point lead.
Off the mark. And this year, the confetti is going to fall for North Carolina. They're not going to be denied this time.
I'd say this one is probably more special because it's been a journey for the last 3 or 4 years. The end, when you're watching your kids jump around and the excitement, the thrill they have, there's no better feeling in the world as a coach.
But now it's show.
Every day after the show, I gather all the kids from the show. We go into one big office. We jump around and then we listen to highlights while One Shining Moment plays in the background.
And we spray you with water.
And we
Okay, that just got really weird.
And we do that 5 days a week. I think that's how I got sick.
Can I be excused from today's performance?
No, today's your water day. You've got to spray me today. Sam Panionovic joins us. Are you still in the desert spending Tribune money? All right, good interview. Sam?
I'm here. I'm waiting for the cue.
Here's the cue. Are you still in the desert?
I am. I'm on my way to the airport. I'm sorry. I heard whistles on that in my sleep, Steve. It's been a rough overnight.
What was the reffing as bad as the internet claims it was?
Oh, it was awful. 40 minutes of a college basketball game, and I'm usually the first one to defend college basketball. I thought the first 10 minutes were exciting. The last three were exciting, but the middle 27 were just awful. I mean, the best players were on the bench. We had, at one point, we had 44 fouls and 52 free throws in a 40-minute game.
Well, that's a snooze. No wonder I couldn't stay awake. Dave, say hi to Sam.
Hey, Sam. There were 44 fouls. The ones that I thought, because I thought it cut both ways, but the calls on Zach Collins, that really hamstrung Gonzaga late in the game. They got their post players into foul trouble. Karnowski had four. Collins ended up fouling out. And I thought that had a major impact on the game down the stretch.
Yeah, Zach Collins is probably the best player in the future for Gonzaga. He's probably a lottery pick next season. Yeah, and three of those fouls were awful. So, you know, Gonzaga's best players were on the bench. You had a couple of Carolina guys. Kennedy Meeks had four fouls early. Yeah. I just felt like the national championship should be decided by skill, by athleticism, by shot making, and instead it was decided by free throws. And I hate to be that guy and blame the officials. In fact, I even asked Coach Williams for North Carolina. I said, what is it like to coach when the officials get too involved? And he said, well, I don't think they got too involved. And I was like, okay. They made it all about them. I mean, there's really a crisis in college basketball officiating right now.
Dave, how do they pick the officials? Is it a merit points-based system?
Yeah, I mean, it is. It is, I think, when you get to the championship
level. These are the best?
These guys are the best. So,
Did they go out drinking the night before? What do we know?
I don't think so. I mean, I think you're always going to have games where the officials end up with a bigger say than maybe you would like to see them have. These guys,
but it seems like all three of them had a collective bad night. If you believe the internet, and as you know, the internet's never wrong.
The internet is never
But Sam,
wrong.
You eyeballed it. You think it was a bad night?
No, I thought it was terrible, and I tweeted that multiple times. I talked to a lot of writers after the game, national, local, both sides, too. And I will give Mark Few credit, the head coach of Gonzaga. He said he thought the officials did a great job. Not a good job, a great job, which maybe he was drinking. But it just, like I said,
well,
you want the players to decide the action, not the officials.
Yeah.
If he complains about the officiating, then
it looks like
sour
he's
grapes.
Yeah.
So he's in kind of a situation there. It's better for him to just say the officials did a good job.
And what was your favorite part about the weekend?
Favorite part about the weekend was probably just getting to see 77,000 people go through the turnstiles on Saturday, and then 76 go through the turnstiles last night. We talk about, well, the product is bad and the officials ruined the night and this and that. But at the end of the day, the NCAA just fattened up that checkbook. And
March Madness.
More and more money. I mean, it's ridiculous the amount of people. I think also, too, just the people coming from all over the country to watch. You had Gonzaga from the Northwest. You had the Carolina schools from the East. You also had Oregon. But this is a national event, and fathers and sons coming through the turnstiles. It still was a pretty solid event. The game finished pretty well. But I just say there was a lot to like.
If you're the 76,168th person in University of Phoenix Stadium,
and about
you're
your
way
seats.
Up. I mean, how do you even see the game? That's the thing playing in these football stadiums.
I went to a couple of Final Fours at Big Barnes.
Yeah.
And just for that perspective, walked upstairs to see what it was like. And there were people upstairs that looked like they needed immediate antidepressants. They went, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. What are we doing? We can't see.
It's ironic. One of the championship games I saw with North Carolina and Illinois in 2005, there was a lot of bad officiating then, too.
Is that the one that Illinois lost?
Yeah, but it was, 19 foul calls to 2?
So bad officiating then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Sam would agree with that, right, Sam?
I remember when I was playing Little League when I was 10 and I struck out at the end of the game. I remember that was bad officiating, too.
Andre, it's funny. Roy Williams actually brought up that game, too, in his post-game press conference. Mm-hmm. I went up there and beat the crap out of him for even bringing it up.
There you go.
Yeah.
You're right, though, about the seats, though, too. I mean, you're pretty much next to St. Peter when you're at the top of the arena. I mean, I don't know how you can even see anything when you're that high up, but hey. They were filled. They were literally filled to the brim. They had to bring extra seating for like standing room at the top of the building.
It's once in a lifetime, and that's why.
I think you chalk it up to wanting to be there for the. It's just like the people who tailgate outside a football stadium but don't go in. Same. You just want to be there.
We got a lot of tailgaters for this show. They pull up outside their showcase studio.
They're out there now.
Yeah, they pop the grill. Sam, get back safe, man. Thanks for the coverage.
Thanks for having me, guys.
See you later, Sam Panionovich. Everyone in the studio, start dancing. It's 7:55. When I go to the dentist, I never brush my teeth before I go. I brush my teeth when I get there. I brush my teeth in the morning and at night. But then I go into the dentist, and I know the dentist has the toothbrush and the brushes. And the toothpaste there. Mm-hmm. And I brush it right before because the germs and the bacteria and the buildup between your morning brushing and the time you get there, you want it to be clean when you go in for the hygienist. It's the right thing to do.
Right. Rinse with a little mouthwash.
Yeah.
So you get a little fresh breath going.
Yeah. So it's the most immediate attack zone to make it a clean zone for the hygienist.
Yes.
So Sandberg's here, and apparently Vanderbilt's on your team. Why do you brush your teeth ahead of time with your own equipment?
Well, it's not that I do it ahead of time. My dentist is at 222 North LaSalle, University Associates in Dentistry. Dr. Marty Marcus, I love him, just so you know. But it's 5 minutes from here. So last night, I put together my travel toothbrush, toothpaste, floss, and then I have bridge threaders because I have a bridge in my mouth. And I will brush my...
As opposed to the... bridge in your yard, yeah.
Yeah.
I will brush my teeth here, and then I will head over there.
So why
at like 10 o'clock?
But
my
I maintain.
10:15.
How long is the walk?
Oh, I'll be taking a cab. It's cold for me.
How long is the cab?
5 minutes.
I maintain the 5 minutes between the time you brush your teeth here and you get there. Your mouth is filled with germs. Oh, Phil!
Come on, just chew some gum.
Germs and bacteria.
Chew some gum. Have a mint.
No, I'm not worried. I'm not a bad breath person,
brush
so I'm not worried about that.
At the place, no. At the dentist's office.
I don't know. I don't feel like that's not what the intention is.
Right.
So
they don't want everyone to brush
their What do you mean that's not
teeth?
The intention?
Your problem is you think she should brush her teeth when she gets there as opposed to the 5 minutes before she hops in the cab.
This all started because she woke up every hour last night on the hour wondering whether or not she had packed her toothbrush and floss.
I knew I had
packed
it,
herself
but sometimes
crazy.
I'm overthinking. I
think. What?
No.
But Mary Vandeveld said she did the same thing yesterday.
I brought my toothbrush. I had my little Ziploc with my toothbrush, my toothpaste, my floss.
With
I went into
the crap you guys
right
carry,
here.
Why would you carry more crap?
Because I was going to the dentist. Yeah, yeah. And I don't want to brush my teeth there because it's my girlfriend is my dentist, Dr. Phyllis Dixon in Oak Brook Terrace, by the way.
Oh, my God. And you guys and your plugs for your dentist.
She is awesome. And, you know, I don't think she wants everybody over there in their little puny little bathroom.
Right, like,
she
their teeth. Teeth isn't set up.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
No.
Plus, I'm taking one of her toothbrushes.
When you go in there, isn't there like a holder, a cup of some kind that has a like 48 toothbrushes?
Ew,
in it?
No. How do you know where that's
been?
Okay,
no, mine.
My dentist doesn't.
Yeah, mine doesn't.
No,
either.
Mine doesn't either.
Well, where do you get the toothbrushes?
Well, you'd have to ask them for a new one.
They give you a new one after.
They give you one after.
My dentist gives me floss,
and you get to pick the color.
Toothpaste, a toothbrush. Yeah.
Yes, but you can. Okay, so you ask for it. But
I'm
the point is,
myself.
It's a dentist's office. It's what they do.
Yeah, I'm a planner. I bring
Let
my
Let me ask
own.
You a question. Before you go get your oil changed, do you change your oil?
No,
but before
this
the cleaning.
Is different.
But wait, before the cleaning lady comes, you got to clean the
Yeah, house. That's it. That's also idiotic.
Yeah.
You guys, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you even walk around. Your team. I don't know how you walk around. You must be so tired.
Dave, hang on a second. Our team.
Come on, Dave. Don't you brush your teeth before you go to the dentist at home?
At the dentist? No. The dentist, the hygienist brushes your teeth.
What?
Okay, but if
you've
had coffee.
What kind of dentist do you go to?
You're a mint, crazy mint eater.
Yes, I am.
If you had coffee and you're going straight to the dentist, you don't bring a toothbrush and brush your teeth?
No, I don't.
And bring a toothbrush?
I don't need it.
He doesn't brush it at the dentist.
First of all, let me say something about this. Dentists know if you, like, flossed your teeth a half hour before you showed up. They're not going to be fooled by your sudden oral hygiene.
Yeah, I agree with that. But that's not the point.
First of all, I floss twice a day anyway.
But I'm not going to brush in the office.
Why? That's what.
Right.
That's what the
That's
point
why
is
you're
for.
There. You're
but
there to get your teeth
But he's not brushing
cleaned.
At the office either. He's
right,
going.
But I'm
in
saying
with
I'm
dirty
doing
teeth.
It because the hygienist doesn't care. The hygienist has been victimized by more bad breath than anyone. Mm-hmm. But it's for me, so I'm less self-conscious. So I brush my teeth before I go in.
But I brush
literally
them.
Before I go in. It's like the surgeon doesn't.
I don't know. My
the surgeon doesn't wash his hands, then go out to lunch, and then go into surgery.
No,
you brush your teeth and then you go in.
Hey, I eat an apple every morning. I'm not having apple in my teeth when I go to the dentist.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
It's time for me to turn my mic on. It's 8:14. Dean Richards joins us live from Channel 9.
Good morning.
Big celebration today with the new 4 o'clock newscast?
Oh, it's huge. It's huge today. We've got our new 4 p.m. news with Ben Bradley and Lourdes Duarte and Demetrius Ivory and Jared Payton, who's going to be doing sports on our 4 to 5 p.m.
Yep.
And then Mark Sapalsa and Mike.
Don't know him. Mark, is he new?
He is a fairly new broadcaster. We have a lot of hope for him. We think he's going to do well.
I don't like his chances.
Micah Mater, one Mr. Tom Skilling.
Skilling. Tom Skilling.
Skilling, I think.
Skilling, yeah.
How you say his name?
Yeah. Obviously a double agent. Yeah.
And Dan Rohn will be on from 5 to 7 p.m. with the evening news.
But at what point do you think they're going to announce the new 7 to 9 news?
It's possible whenever Maury Povich is ready to anchor that.
No, just have Sapalsa be on from 5 to 10:30.
Right.
Yeah, that's okay.
There's people driving in and going, I work an 8-hour day.
You know, what's wrong with that?
Yeah. Skilling already works, what, a 15-hour day, Dean?
Skilling only goes home for 15 minutes a month.
Right, to change.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Anyway, good luck to Lourdes and everybody.
Yeah, it should be great. I mean, you know, they're I think we can't get enough of Chicago's very own news.
No, and the fine management at Channel 9, and I mean this, are given the city and the Chicagoland area. I don't like Chicagoland as a phrase.
I don't either.
The greater Chicago area, more news than anybody else, mm-hmm. with a bigger team and more commitment to it. That's it.
Exactly right.
And more reporters, I believe, from the Chicago area than any other station.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
We'll check passports today when
yes.
they come in the building.
Well, I should do that every day.
Oh, Chicago's
Harrison Ford, Roman Polanski, Keith Richards, Chuck Berry, Martin Lawrence, all in Dean's Report. But that's not why you're here today. You're here today to answer the following question. When you go to the dentist, you do go to the dentist, don't you?
Of course.
Yeah. When you go to the dentist, you brush your teeth before you go in to have a cleaning to the hygienist.
Oh, like a madman. Are you kidding? I get it like a Brillo pad because you want them to think that you're that conscientious every day.
So do you use their equipment or do you bring some from home?
Do you brush it at home and go or at work and go?
No, I'll do the interview.
Yeah, people are
misconstruing. Do you bring in the equipment from home?
What do you mean, do I bring the equipment from home?
Because Sandberg and Vandeveld apparently have dental 911 kits they're carrying around with them at all times.
Dean, I have a dentist appointment today. It's at 10:15. At 10 o'clock here at the office, I'm going to brush my teeth, and then I will head over to the dentist, which is 5 minutes away.
I brush my teeth at the office right before I go in, stat. Yeah, I also scrub up. I put on rubber gloves.
I'll bring a toothbrush with me before I go so I don't have a big chunk of Egg McMuffin in my mouth.
You bring a toothbrush. Well, they have toothbrushes. It's a dentist's office.
Yeah, but I don't want to do it there. I want it to look like I have meticulous, beautiful, minty fresh hygiene all the time.
Do you want to plug your dentist, by the way? Everyone else has. You want to plug your dentist? Dr. Crombie is my dentist. Andre, you want to plug your dentist?
Sure, Dr. Holman. Love you, Dr. Holman.
Dave, you want to plug
Michigan
your dentist?
Michigan and Lake, 30 South Michigan.
My dad was my dentist for many years.
That's the last time Dave went to the dentist.
No.
When did your dad retire?
40 years ago.
It's about 20 years ago, I think.
Mike's going to the dentist for the first time in a few years on Thursday.
Well, you're one of those guys that are afraid of the dentist?
The first time?
Hate the dentist. Bad experiences.
That's because he doesn't go off.
And because I didn't bring my toothbrush and it just screwed everything up.
I always wondered who the people were who were scared of the dentist.
That's a legitimate thing.
Really?
Yeah, that's a legitimate thing.
I had terrible experiences as a kid. I mean, like, really, the dentist from Little Shop of Horrors was our childhood dentist. And it was awful. It took me years to get over it. And then I met a great dentist. It was gentle and, as pain-free as possible. And now I enjoy it.
Dr. Crombie offers a turndown service. There's a little chocolate there for when I walk in.
That's nice.
That's why you got to brush
your teeth. Here are some of the texters. Totally disagree with the two Marys. I agree with Steve. Well, that's a good start. 847, good morning. I manage a dental office and you're a hygienist. Generally appreciate someone who brushes their teeth before they come to have their teeth cleaned.
Of course.
It's pretty disgusting to have someone come in with all kinds of stuff in their teeth.
There you go.
Yeah. The cleaning the hygienist does is to get off the tartar and to build up that does not come off a toothbrush, so it's nice courtesy for patients to do that. It's also a time saver. However, 224, I'm a dentist. I tell my patients, you're coming and paying for a cleaning. I'm here to clean for you. And then 224, please, the bacteria in your mouth, if you normally have good hygiene, is no issue. All you do in your brush when you get to the office is make us wait for you to finish and throw off our schedule.
Well, see, I get there early. So.
We happily will remove your morning apple pieces, Mary. No big deal.
Thank you.
Lisa, proud Northwestern University dental hygienist grad. So there you go.
What about my banana?
That sounds mean to me.
What sounds mean?
That's like, don't waste our time.
Well, I get there early.
Don't throw our schedule off.
That's a fair question.
For a 10:15 appointment, I'll be there at 10:08.
Yeah, but I think what we can agree through all of this very important discussion is I'm right. Dr. Crombie. Did I mention Dr. Crombie?
Yes.
Yeah, Dr. Crombie. Great dentist. Got like lots of toothbrushes if you need one.
That sounds like the name of a PBS series, doesn't it?
Dr. Crombie. Tonight on Dr. Crombie.
Tonight on Dr. Crombie.
I hug my dentist.
You what?
I hug him when I see him.
Well, no wonder he likes it. It's 8:19. We're back after this on 720 WGN. And more Dean.
You'll be calling his name. Oh.
Back to Channel 9 and Dean Richards. Texter wants you to start a TV show, sort of like. Who's the guy? Is it Dateline? It was a story of murder. That guy.
That's Bill Curtis, wasn't it, when he did Cold Case Files?
No, there's an NBC guy. I can't think of his name.
Dateline was the Predator.
It was all about guy. Murder.
Oh.
That guy. But anyway,
about dental.
Dexter wants you to do bad dental experiences as a TV show.
I was thinking about that during the break. You know, for the year, I like to kind of get a sort of like a signature question that I ask all celebrities that I talk to, and I think I may start asking people about their dental hygiene.
That'd be your warm up.
Yeah, we'll talk about the movie. And, and then any scandals.
Right, because nice teeth in Hollywood, right?
I mean, very important.
By the way, Keith Morrison is the guy I was thinking of.
So, Miss Streep, how are your bicuspids?
Wasn't she in a movie called Bicuspids? She did a film there.
I noticed your overbite seems to be somewhat maladjusted.
So, and some people in Hollywood are famous for their bad teeth.
Oh, yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, imagine with the British actors.
Yeah. You ever sat down with a star and there's something going on with their face or their appearance that you can't not stare at?
Two words, Woody Allen.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
Well, what was
I'm talking
it?
To Woody Allen.
He's tiny?
He is tiny, but you kind of expect him. That doesn't shock you. What does shock you is the Amazon jungle that was growing out of his ears.
Oh, no, really?
It's like super, any man, as you get a little older, for some reason, the hair starts growing like crazy in the ear.
Yeah, it can't grow it on your head, but it grows out of your ears.
Yeah, but
not that I'd know.
No.
Most of us do some grooming so we don't look disgusting. Woody Allen, I could not take my eyes off of the ear hair. I didn't hear one word that the man said to me in the interview.
I find if there's bad ear hair, there's bad nose hair, too.
Of course.
Sure, yeah.
Not cool.
And if they go ahead and they tie the two together, it's not stylish at all.
You mean literally tie the hair where it meets, you mean?
Yeah, from the nose to the ear.
Oh, that's
like
gross.
Mutton chops.
Yeah.
All right, so bicuspid talk and nose and ear hair questions. Expect a lot of those this year with the A-listers.
All right, so Harrison Ford flew a plane in a place he wasn't supposed to fly a plane, and everybody thought he'd lose his pilot's license in time to take away Grandpa's keys. What happened?
You would think. And also, there was, remember he crash-landed a plane a little over a year ago?
Mm-hmm. On a golf course.
On a golf course. So, everybody thought for sure there's no way that they're going to let him continue to fly until yesterday when the FAA said that he can keep his pilot's license without any restrictions, and that the FAA investigation on this small plane landing, he landed on a taxiway instead of a runway, just happened to be a 737 jet already on that taxiway that he flew directly over. 100 people were in that plane. Nobody was injured, but still it was kind of scary. But yesterday the FAA said, no problem. Try to be a little more careful in the future.
So basically anytime Harrison Ford flies, people could be killed.
I'm going into the root cellar, and I don't even have a root cellar. I'm going to have a root cellar built just so in case Harrison Ford flies over my house, I'll have some place to hide.
What a great joke would be, like the next time Dean flies to L.A. or New York, which could be any weekend, obviously, I somehow make it happen where Harrison Ford is in the pilot's chair, and he comes out and he says hello.
That would be a funny prank video, wouldn't it?
It would be excellent.
Of, you're sitting on the plane getting ready to take off, and Harrison Ford comes in a pilot's uniform.
Right.
Just want to thank you all for joining me here today.
And
he'll be fine.
And he claims he's not Harrison Ford. He claims he's Bob Smith, a pilot. Roman Polanski. Now, here's a story that's 40 years old.
Yeah.
And this is a guy who had sex with a girl. Was what, 13?
Raped a 13-year-old girl, 1977.
Right. And ran to France.
Yep.
Lived there forever.
Because he thought that the judge at that time was going to give him 90 days in a psychiatric facility. He learned before the sentencing happened that it was going to be 50 years in prison. So he splits for France, where he's been ever since. He put in a request with the judge the other day to see if it's possible for him to return to the United States to guarantee that he wouldn't have to serve any more jail time. Well, he hasn't served any jail time. He left, but that he wouldn't have to serve jail time at all. The judge in Los Angeles yesterday said No way. You come back and you are going to be sentenced for this crime.
Well, and there are people that are, in my opinion, rightfully upset when they see Hollywood laud Roman Polanski for his film work. Because some things, in my opinion, you can't compartmentalize, and raping a child would be one of them.
100% agree.
So
that's, to me, one of the most inexcusable things that there can possibly be. Anyone who takes advantage of any child, completely inexcusable as far as I'm concerned.
Do we know what happened to the girl? Who's obviously a woman now. She's in her 50s.
Do not know. I don't know that.
Chuck Berry being honored by Keith Richards. Does Keith know that Chuck's gone?
Apparently he does. He was interviewed by Rolling Stone magazine. Rolling Stone magazine, and they asked him in his best memories of Chuck Berry, and he's got many. He said that Chuck Berry is definitely one of his rock and roll idols. One time after a Chuck Berry concert, Keith Richards goes backstage and is waiting for him in his dressing room, and his guitar is laying right there. Chuck Berry's guitar is right there. So Keith picks up the guitar. He starts plucking on the strings a little bit. Chuck Berry walks in, punches him in the eye. Punches him. Richards admits that he was wrong, because as Steve has said so many times, you don't mess with another man's axe.
I've said that. I've lived my life that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of my core principles.
Said that Chuck Berry could be prickly at times, but at the same time was a very warm man, and truly was rock and roll in its purest essence.
I did an appearance with Annika Sorenstam, the great golfer.
Love Annika.
And she wanted me to go ahead and show her something. I was talking about a problem I was having with my swing. In other words, all of it. And she goes, well, grab this. You know, she had her bag there. And she goes, here, take this club and show me. And I go, I'm not touching your clubs.
Oh, yeah. No.
You can't touch somebody else's golf clubs.
No.
It's part of my don't mess with another man's axe rule of life.
You guys are saying axe, right?
Maybe.
Confirming that.
Okay. All right, we're almost out of time, but I have to know, how can Martin Lawrence afford a $500,000 engagement ring?
Must be a lot of residual money from that old Martin Lawrence show.
Because
he hasn't done an awful lot since then. He's had a few movie roles, done a little bit of stand-up. But he proposed to his longtime girlfriend over the weekend. She is a nurse practitioner. She accepted his proposal, posted some pictures on the web. And the ring that he gave her is a 5-carat diamond ring with diamonds spelling out their initials on the back band of the diamond ring.
That's good. She won't be able to take it away if she gets divorced.
The estimated value of this
$500,000. I heard that he bought it online from a bunch of French bandits.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Oh, look at
that's
the head. Wee wee.
How do their initials wind up being K and K? That doesn't seem right.
Let's just go with that. All right, buddy. Enjoy the day.
See ya.
8:33, back with a big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Hello, Peter. What's happening? We have sort of a problem here. Yeah, you apparently didn't put one of the new cover sheets on your TPS reports.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry about that. I forgot.
Yeah. You see, we're putting the cover sheets on all TPS reports now before they go out. Did you see the memo about this?
Yeah, I have the memo right here. I just,
If you could just go ahead and make sure you do that from now on, that would be great. And I'll go ahead and make sure you get another copy of that memo. Okay?
It's time for America's favorite game show, and I don't say that lightly. It's Shop Talk. Shop Talk, the game where you try to stump us geniuses with your baffling terminology about what you do at work. All right? A texter actually chimed in. We have to take phone calls in this case for the game. This is a good example. Following the guidelines of Bloom's taxonomy, I use differentiated methods.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. Following the guidelines of Bloom's taxonomy, I use differentiated methods. So Bloom's obviously florist. Taxonomy, do we charge taxes on the flowers? differentiated methods, does it depend on if they're from the state or not? So you're a florist trying to check somebody out.
I don't think
but
so.
But that's not Steve. Right?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well, thank you, Texter, for that. Catherine and Jody are on the line. We lost one caller, and we still have one other prize that I'm more than happy to give away that we had set up. Previous caller had to jump. 312-981-7200 is the number. Let's go to Catherine in Evanston. Starting here.
Hey,
good morning.
You?
Good morning, Catherine. How are you doing?
Hey, how are you?
We're great. How are you?
Okay, so client arrived 15 minutes late, appeared clean and well kept, except she had a piece of apple in her mouth. Sorry, Mary, had to answer that. She was oriented times three.
Oriented times three.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. She was oriented. She's a client. Hmm. She was oriented times three.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start on the seventh floor. Vanderbilt, you got anything?
Oriented?
Oriented times
yep.
three. Oriented, she
ooh,
was...
Oriented
times
so
three.
So she has already done something three times. I don't know.
She checked in three times. She was...
Interviewed three times?
Interviewed three times.
Actually, when I have to define this, it makes me sick when I have to say what oriented times three is.
Wow, okay. Very looking forward to the answer.
Is it the oldest profession?
No. Well, maybe sometimes, but
what?
No.
I'm
all right.
Thinking...
Ride that button in there. We're getting close. Oriented times three. Any idea?
I'm thinking psychologist.
Psychologist.
Or a therapist.
No.
Okay.
No. No answer, Dave. I got nothing.
She required three
was,
appointments.
Well, am I supposed to say yes or no? Or
yeah, 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 yeah. Therapist?
Okay. Yes, a clinician. But I also want to tell you
what?
Guys.
Yes,
what?
I told
what?
You. What?
What?
So oriented times three is you have to find out if they're sane. So you have to ask them what day it is, why they're here, and this is what kills me, is the President of the United States. I can't even say that sentence.
Catherine, we do that with Steve every morning, so that's just...
Yeah. And he viciously fails. Can I also just tell you guys, I spoke to Uncle Bobby the week before he died, and we were cracking up because it was the full moon, and I told him that I was so grateful to have the keys to be able to leave the psych ward because it was insane. And it's always crazy in a psych ward when it's a full moon.
See,
and I talked to him the first right before he
wow,
died.
Wow, how about that?
Wow.
Well, that's actually a nice memory.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I actually, yeah.
Yeah, and oriented times
so cool.
three, I didn't even know they were doing it, but now I do.
See,
yeah,
we actually have fun doing this. Steve, who's the President of the United States?
Ugh.
Lincoln. Hold on, Lincoln. Yeah. It all went bad after Lincoln. all right, so Catherine, here's the deal. Catherine technically lost because you won, but because I like Catherine and I'm amazing, you knew what that was.
And you're scared of her?
No, I'm going to let her win.
Okay, good.
I'm going to let her win. We're going to give her tickets to the Tony Award-winning musical Disney's Mary Poppins playing at the Mercury Theater Chicago through May 28th. Bring the whole family. Tickets at mercurytheaterchicago.com or 773-325-1700. Jody and Linda, you're next after traffic. Here's Mary. Now, welcome back. To Shop Talk. Please put on your safety glasses as we continue with Shop Talk, where you give us your work language, your work jargon, and we try to guess it. I'm still amazed you got that.
I know. Good guess.
Oriented three times.
Just a guess.
Therapist. Huh. Jody's in Gray's Lake. Jody, you're next. What's your Shop Talk?
Hi. Okay, so I have something that I would write on my summary. So it is, I reduced ramps on the caudal 311, blended transitions, made a functional wave, and adjusted the DGL3 for good occlusion.
All right, give it to me again.
Okay. I reduced ramps on the caudal 311, blended transitions, made a functional wave, and adjusted the DGL3 for good occlusion.
Occlusion sounds like dentistry to me.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Something in the
be more specific, though.
Dentistry world. Hmm. Oral surgeon?
No.
Andrea? Andrea, you're seeing therapist? It worked for you last time.
I was actually going to say something in the automotive industry, but...
Good.
I'm going to say... Who's the guy who puts on your braces?
Orthodontist.
Yeah, I'm going to say an orthodontist.
Nope.
And Dave?
I am going to say x-ray technician.
Nope, wrong again.
Mary Vanderbilt.
Some sort of engineer, but I'm not sure what kind.
Like Thomas the Tank Engine?
Biomedical engineer.
Oh, biomedical engineer.
Oh, I'm not that smart. Nope.
Now you're a big winner. What do you do?
I'm a horse dentist.
Oh, oh, wow. We were right with the dentistry.
Yeah, but not specific enough. Boy. She's right.
What's a DGL3?
That's a like a wedge on their incisors. Instead of being a flat horizontal line, they're at a diagonal.
Oh. Let me ask you a question. Your question, yeah. When you hear she's a horse dentist, yeah. Is what's a DGL3?
Well, that,
that's the first thing that occurs to you? My question would be, how do you get the horse to hold still?
Oh, but its mouth.
Chemical restraint.
Chemical restraint. Right, right. Okay, hey, we got to remember that too,
Does
Steve.
Does the horse floss?
Ew.
No.
With what? A rope? Okay, so how many teeth does a horse have?
It's none of your business.
If they have all their teeth that they're supposed to have, they would have 44. So they could have more or less.
Apparently one of your patients is waiting. I think this is perfect for you that works in dentistry. We've got 4 tickets to the Chicago Artisan Chocolate Show, April 22nd and 23rd at the Plumbers Hall West Loop. Learn more about the Semi-Sweet World. Meet over 50 great chocolate makers. Tickets and details at chocolateevents.com. A horse dentist.
Steve, at least
that for you.
Cool.
That's cool.
At least
that's a cool job.
At least her patients aren't naysayers.
Okay. Okay, let's go to Linda and Crown
Point. That was cool.
That was really good.
No, it really wasn't. Linda.
Thank you.
Yes, hello.
All right, Linda, give me your shop talk.
All right. This would be something that I would say to one of my coworkers. Go next door and bring me over a box of 2-inch weatherheads.
Did you say butterheads?
Weatherheads.
Oh, weatherheads.
I thought you said leatherheads.
They're all good. Go next door and give me a box of 2-inch leatherheads. Or weatherheads.
Weatherheads. Weatherheads.
2-inch weatherheads. Sounds like hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Weatherheads, is that a type of nail?
I'm thinking it's like a deck screw.
You're in construction.
Somewhat.
Okay, more specific. You are a construction supervisor.
For a horse.
You're a construction supervisor that orders weatherheads. All right, I'm wrong. Go.
Hardware store.
No.
No. Not to the hardware store. No.
No
okay.
clue. No clue.
Vanderbilt, you don't know? Dave?
No.
No.
Got nothing. Go. All right, so what do you do?
Okay, I work in a plumbing and electrical wholesale house. And a weatherhead is what sits on top of the riser pipe that the utility company hooks up their power line to the
roof
of your house.
Steve. Of course. How did you not know that after all your years in plumbing?
Funny, it's what we call Tom Skilling.
Linda, great job. Hold on. What do I give Linda? I forgot what prize I'm giving her. What would you like me to give Linda? Oh, how about a Cubs? The Cubs Way, the Zen of building the best team in baseball and breaking the curse by Tom Verducci, one of the best baseball writers, period. Verducci's going to be on the show to talk about that book. Should we throw in David Kaplan's book when it comes out as well?
Yeah. Sure.
Sure. And a box of weatherheads.
And a box of weatherheads.
That'd be phenomenal.
Yeah. Good point by you. Let's take a break. Come back. Get your news next. CLTV will join us as well in just a second. Dave's got himself a Hawkopedia in the 9 o'clock hour before Bill and Wendy on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
As a developer, I've been through the hard times in the real estate business where everything dried up.
I need $312,000.
$3.2 million.
$215,000.
Mentor me and teach me because I have a lot to learn.
I've developed $250 million worth of real estate. But it's your house, but it's my money. There must be a disconnect.
Hear me out, brother.
You're not taking my advice. It was insulting. It's not just about the deal. It's about the people.
9:12 clips from The Deed. Sean Conlon joins us in just a second. Sandberg and DeVlantis, big fans of the program, as am I. And you know, here's the thing. There's so much emotion involved in money. And the thing that CNBC does behind the scenes with shows like The Prophet and The Deed is they really take you behind the scenes about the real raw emotion of it. It's like, okay, I know it's a TV show, but I'm bringing you in, and I'm bringing you in, and I'm going to trust you. And I meant what I said when I said it, but now I'm in trouble. And what do you mean you're not going to help me?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're Sean Conlon, it's a lot of money. You got to, Sean, I don't envy your gig, man. I don't. It's tough.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
I appreciate you coming. Appreciate you coming on. Explain the premise of The Deed. I've got a business issue. I've got a debt issue. I want to be the flip it king. I come to you and try to get your attention. Why?
Well, the first thing I would tell you is be a good listener, because your ears rarely get you in trouble. So we'll start there and we'll work backwards. It's a really untarnished look at real estate flipping. I mean, there's no question flipping is still the quickest way for the average American to maybe someday build an empire and maybe end up in the White House. But there's, like life, there's so many pitfalls along the way, and people think it's a lot easier than it actually is. It still is the path. It's just so many things can go wrong.
And isn't emotion one of your biggest enemies?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I tell people when they freak out, because I've been through my own crazy share of ups and downs, and that's why they call it life. Take a breath. You're not going to be able to tackle every single situation. People get so emotional. You'll see in some of these episodes people going bananas. I mean, it's pretty wild, but it's pretty natural.
Sean, a couple of questions. First of all, is it better to buy existing property and try and flip it, or buy the land and build up and then sell?
You could have an argument for days on that, Andrea, because it's very hard to finance the land when you purchase it. You've mainly to pay cash for it. And building something new comes with all the usual pitfalls. But then rehabbing something, and again, I'm answering up the middle here, because rehabbing something, you could get in there. And I'm standing in the house I'm talking to you today, and when I purchased it, I discovered after the fact, because I purchased it quickly, that it was basically 4 feet off center tilting.
Oops.
I must have been hung over that day, because I must have been walking in a night.
Yeah, you thought, well, it seems balanced to me. 4 feet, man. 4 feet. That's a Disney ride.
I mean, it pretty much was. And then try rehabbing that thing in 2008 and 2009. It was a really scary Disney ride.
So really, which I think what you're saying is it's an a la carte kind of thing. Some properties, the lot's a better idea, but some are, you know, buy it and redo it.
I think, sorry, I didn't mean to jump in there, but I think net, for a person starting out and flipping, getting an existing structure that you can even put some lipstick on and pretty it up is the safer route initially.
When people ask for your help and ask for your investment in their lives and their time and their situation, how many of them don't fully buy in until you make them buy in? In other words, you come in and I'm all in with you, but when you come in and go, okay, Sean, here's what I think we should do.
Let me tell you something. There's a lot of carrot and maybe more stick in that relationship, to be frank with you. People have a tendency to, yeah, tell you what you want to hear. But then when the rubber meets the road, they're like, wait, I didn't think it was going to be this difficult, or I had to do these things. So listen, there's a lot of tough medicine I dish out on it, but that is how you learn. I am incredibly seasoned because I got my ass kicked in the business.
Right.
It's true. Hey, Sean, I have a friend who's a neighbor who is constantly saying, we should buy a place and flip it. So what are your thoughts on buying property with friends or family trying to do it together?
Sean's the expert, but let me just give you my answer. They're a con man.
Okay.
And all right, Sean, pick it up from there.
Yeah, okay. You answered my question. Let me tell you something. It's always very tricky when you get into business with friends. It's similar to your neighbor there saying, hey, let's buy a bottle of whiskey and we'll go discuss politics and religion. I mean, odds are it ends poorly.
Yeah, it's probably not wise. And, you know, if you run in certain circles, you run into a lot of rich folks, right? I've had more than one rich guy tell me, he goes, your money doesn't care if you're upset.
Yes.
Which I just think is a great perspective, you know? So take a deep breath.
Yeah.
Take a step back. Sleep on it. Whatever the case may be, because whatever you need to do to get away from the upset and the emotion of the moment to make a more rational decision.
If you can take the emotion out of it, which is easier said than done, again, you know, the real estate building, similar to your money, doesn't care how you feel.
Right.
It just wants to be finished. So the reason why I'm still such a fan of this unvarnished look, I tell people, you're a property flipper developer. You're not a designer. Nobody cares about your Versace velvet wallpaper. It looks ridiculous. No disrespect, Versace. But, I mean, that is all the sort of crazy things you see go into it. But net, at the end of the day, it is still, you or I have a better chance of being hit by a meteorite right now and being rescued by Giselle than being Mark Zuckerberg. It's just the fact, you know, the odds of that are 1 trillion to 1. You could be driving home tonight and say, hey, there's a nice little rehab. I should call that Irish guy I talked on the phone today. Maybe we'll do a flip.
You know, the other thing, though, that I think I've picked up from your show, Sean, is like anything else in life, if you're going to get involved in a business, you have to like the idea of that business, unless you're, you know, a venture capitalist or something and it's just investment money. But if you're going to get involved in flipping, you don't have to necessarily know how to swing a hammer, but you better like the idea of going in and turning a house over or going in and turning over some property, right? I mean, you can't be somebody who hates that.
You know all the things you ignored your mother telling you growing up, all those isms from your mother, and now you know your mother's right. The old adage, you should kind of maybe love what you do, which you obviously love what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You're so much better at it. Easier said than done to find a gig that you love. But don't flip because you think it's trendy. You know, have an interest in real estate. And I've always had a passion for property, you know, and obviously it's a totally true story that I did rock up to Chicago. And I was, as I said, I used to tell people I was a janitor. I was actually an assistant to the janitor. So I was pumping my resume a little. I just didn't want that to come out.
Yeah, right. You don't want it to get out that you're the assistant.
Yeah, that would be a real shocking WikiLeaks moment, my resume. That'd be brief.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, no, you have to love it. Absolutely.
All right, first episode of the new season has aired. Check your local listings wherever you are listening this morning. I'm sure you can get the first episode on demand, but normal airtime for The Deed is what?
So it's on. It will be on 9 p.m. Chicago time tomorrow night, 10 Eastern and Western. And they rerun it most nights, but tomorrow night is my second episode. And
right.
It's pretty cool. The guys buy the wrong house, which... You couldn't make that stuff up. I mean, you couldn't actually write it. People would say it's ridiculous. But it's a great story. Very interesting twists and turns. So we're on Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Chicago time and 10 Eastern and Western.
Well, you're my second favorite Irishman after my brother-in-law. And
thank you.
I think you're doing, you know, I think actually doing a service on the show, too, because you're teaching people on The Deed on CNBC. Thanks for being on.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
All right. There you go. That's Sean Conlon. Good guy.
It's a cool idea to flip like that, to flip homes.
You know why Devontis is a fan?
Because she's a flipper?
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, on the show this morning, during the show this morning, she bought your house and flipped it.
She probably did. Well, yeah. She flipped shows.
Yeah.
I love Anna. I'm kidding.
That's
I love
a good
Anna.
Point. That's a very good point. She did. She flipped shows. Traitor.
Love her.
9:20, Steve Cochran Show continues in a moment on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Puck turned over to Carroll, left circle to Seabrook, right point. Hammers one off the inboards, bounces out. Panarin fires from the left circle, he scores! Well, Richard Panik is in the Bruin net, but the Hawks right now are on the board. 2-1 is the score for Panarin. That's his fifth goal in the last four games.
I love when Troy laughs.
Was he laughing at Richard Panik's expense there?
Well, I don't know at his expense, but certainly the puck boinking off his head.
Well,
was
that's what I mean.
Kind of an amusing thing. Troy Murray joins us now. Troy does a great job with John Weideman. Are you familiar with John Weideman?
Yes.
He's a guy that talks super fast and never makes a mistake.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
This is all sponsored by Chicago's own Nuveen. Hi, buddy.
Good morning.
How funny was
that
it
was
when,
funny.
When, the puck, when the puck bonked off his head? Have you ever seen that before?
I don't think quite like that. I don't think I ever have. The funny part was, and Panarin was talking later, he said, I didn't think the goal was going to count. And he kind of just stopped, and the next time he just shot it in the net, which just missed his head the second time. Then they realized that the goal actually was going to count.
I'm going to guess there's limited practice of that particular play.
I would think so. You know, one thing that they always talk about is driving hard to the net.
Yeah.
Well, I guess he did that.
Yes, he did. Driving hard to the net with his head yeah. first.
He took an elbow to the beak.
But he did get credit for the assist.
He did. It was beautiful.
Yeah. You know, and you can't always count on that. So that's always a positive.
That takes a unique set of skills.
Wasn't the Andrew Shaw headbutt of the puck, but it's top five funny moments in the last couple of years.
The look on Panik after when he was peeling himself out of the net was priceless. He was just like, what just happened? I have no idea. My mouth hurts, but the puck's in the net and everybody's celebrating.
Right. Good job with your head there. Troy Murray's here. Dave, say hi to Troy.
Troy, good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
So three games to go, and right now it doesn't look like they're going to catch Washington. It's still an outside chance, but it's really not about that at this point, is it? It's more about kind of continuing the surge and the way they've played the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, about a month ago, you could just sit there and you're going, well, you know, probably not going to get first in our division, let alone first overall in the NHL. You just kind of take care of business game by game. I know it's kind of cliche-ish, but at the same time, you take care of your own business. And all of a sudden, Minnesota faltered. You find yourself in first place in the Central, you first place in the Western Conference. Everything's got to go right for you to play Washington in game seven in the Stanley Cup final and have them be able to maybe take advantage of that home ice that they have at this point. But it's not for the it's not the focus of the Blackhawks heading in these last three games. As Brent Seabrook was talking about it last game, the focus is playing the right type of hockey, playing the right type of style, getting our minds ready to play that next level of playoff hockey that everybody inside this locker room knows that has to be achieved if they want to win another Stanley Cup. So, you know, three games to work some things out here. I would not be surprised if Joel Quenneville took an opportunity here in these last three games on the road to rest one or two players and get a couple other guys involved before the postseason. So, the bottom line is you played a pretty good game against Boston the other day. You lost, but Joel Quenneville, nobody was really upset about that because it was a good game. They played well. A lot of things that they're looking to do in the postseason, they're trying to work on here the last three games.
Well, we know Darling's going to get at least one game. I think he might get two. Who else would you like to see get a little time off?
Well, I think, you know, he's got to try and figure out what he's going to do as far as his four-line rotation. Who's going to get in there? You know, is Jordan Tutu going to play in the playoffs? Is it going to be, Yurko? Is it going to be Desjardins? Where's Hinostroza going to fit in here? Who's back up with the team? I'm sure he's going to get in the game. I'd like to see Michael Kempney and Michael Roosevelt get an opportunity. And I wouldn't be surprised if in one of these games that Joel doesn't take out an entire defensive pairing and put Kempney and Michael Roosevelt in there. I think it's kind of important for Kempney to get in a really good game here right before the playoffs. Before they made the trade for Johnny Oduya, Kempney was playing extremely well. And now, unfortunately for him, you know, in picking up Johnny Oduya, somebody's got to come out of the lineup. So I'd like to see Kempney get in on the backside. And then Joel Quenneville, I think, will take an opportunity to rotate some of the forwards who are extra right now and get them in too as well.
There's no downside to depth. The Blackhawks have as good a depth, I think, as there is, except it does pose some interesting questions, right? There are a lot of options for Joel Quenneville as he looks towards the playoffs. And is it tough for guys who maybe are going to be, they know they're going to be in and out and they might be called on in the playoffs, but they might not get a chance? I mean, it's kind of tricky, isn't it?
It is tricky, and, you know, for Joel Quenneville, the bad thing is you can't make everybody happy because somebody has to sit. And I think that, you know, the big part of any kind of a championship-winning team is everybody realizes that even the guys who are not in the lineup on any given game are just as important as the guys in the lineup. It's all about the team, and the guys who aren't playing have to, you know, really support the guys who are, work extremely hard, keep a good positive attitude. I was kind of in that position when I was playing here in Denver with the Avs in 96. I was in and out of the lineup. And even in the championship series against the Florida Panthers, I didn't play in any of the four games because Mark Crawford was hesitant to change the rotation of what the lineup was when they were on a roll. So they rolled the last four games and won that. So I'm very well aware of that. But the important thing is you have that support group from the guys inside the locker room who are playing, and make sure that those guys who are not playing are feeling a big part of the team. And I think that this core group of guys understands that, and everybody appreciates that, you know, how important everybody is on the roster.
It's not easy, though. It's not easy not getting ice time. And, you know, Dave, there's
nobody's happy. Everybody wants to play.
That's the point. And there's not a lot of space on the bench, Dave. And if you're the guy that keeps having to go, excuse me, and you keep sliding down to make room for the guys that are playing, you don't want to be the slide-down guy.
No.
Well, I know you never want to be the slide-down guy. When you're sitting next to the defenseman on the bench, you know you're in trouble because that's the last spot the coach is looking for.
Right.
But, you know, they've got a really good group of guys inside the room, and as frustrating as it is for players who are not in the lineup working that extra,
Everybody kind of understands it's a big part of the game. And the matchup is going to be, you know, the team that the Blackhawks will be playing, which is completely up in the air, will kind of determine maybe what the lineup is going to look like. If it's a heavier team, you know, expect Desjardins and maybe Tutu to be in the lineup. If it's a quicker team, you know, might play Vinny Hinostroza. So, it's, you know, there's going to be kind of a little bit of a chess match here about what kind of a lineup Joel Quenneville wants to put in and what players will be in on any given night.
Colorado pregame win, Dave.
7:30 tonight, and 8 o'clock, John and Troy will have the call.
Last three games on the road, and then the boys come home to start the playoffs. Western Conference winners means they'll hold through the Stanley Cup Final, which they'll win in six games, and I haven't decided against who yet.
Well done. you took out the lucky eight ball and did all your calculations.
Yes, yes, it's very scientific. Yes.
Well, three possible, Troy, three possible teams. I mean, it looks like St. Louis, Nashville is the most likely, Calgary, St. Louis. And any preference there?
You know what, Dave, I would never do that because I'm not one of those guys who says this is a better matchup. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to play all the good teams anyways to get to the championship. If you look at the year after they won their first one, but they played Phoenix. It was yep. Phoenix back then in the first round. And everybody said, oh, this is the great matchup. Well, I don't think the mindset for the players really got kicked into gear that series. They lost in five games. And, you know, they just didn't play playoff type of hockey. But I think it was because of the matchup that they thought it was going to be an easy series. And they got out-competed and outworked by Phoenix. So you never want to pick your partner. You never want to pick your poison going into the postseason. Wherever the cards fall, play those teams and make it work.
You and John sound better than ever. And always great hearing John Weideman and Troy Murray.
The more important thing, Steve, is we're looking better than ever.
Like I said, you sound terrific. And 720 WGN.
I will second that. You guys look great, Troy.
Yes, you do. You both look great.
We both have faces for radio, and so do you, Mr. Cochran.
I'm going to reach out there and smack you. It's my friend, Troy Murray. All right, thanks, buddy. Great job as always. Hold the line. You've won nothing, and we'll come back with a big story next on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show. Well, I got me a fine wife. I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on a riddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle.
Orion Samuelson rejoins us. Hello, buddy.
Well, good morning and greetings from the desert in Arizona, where we're looking at a very pleasant day once again, 71 degrees.
How you feeling?
Feeling better, slowly but surely, getting better with the leg bypass surgery that doctors told me before they did the surgery would be a lot more painful than open heart surgery, and boy, they were right. It turned out to be more of an enterprise than I thought it would be, but yes, finally, after a lot of visits with specialists, it's getting back to normal. I'm beginning to walk without a cane, so I'm doing
good.
Fine.
Very good. Yes. Sonny Perdue, the new ag secretary, is still waiting to be confirmed. Congress, because they're so overworked, is going to go on Easter break here in a few days.
Yeah, right.
Doesn't look like it'll be confirmed before the break. Couple questions. How big a deal is the ag secretary, and why is it such a low priority for this administration and for Congress?
Well, it's a low priority for Congress and this administration, and it would have been for the Democratic administration as well, is because most people serving in Congress and other cabinet positions have no understanding of the important role that agriculture plays in our security and in our economic picture, because we, you know, continue to have a positive trade balance in one segment of our industry, and that's agriculture.
And that's it.
And that's it. And Washington just doesn't understand that. I think the problem that we're seeing with the confirmation of Sonny Perdue is he was involved in several companies and getting those in place to meet the demands and requirements of serving in a cabinet position, maybe taking a little bit longer than expected. But yes, agriculture was not mentioned in the campaign last year, not being talked about a great deal now, but I tell you what, if there's a blow-up between the Chinese president and Donald Trump in this meeting that's taking place this week, that could have a major impact on the economics of the agricultural industry, of course, but of the entire country, because, as I've said so many times, 95% of the people on the planet live outside the borders of the United
right.
States. And we can produce so much more than we can consume that if we can't sell it overseas and do it in a trading way, then we are in huge economic trouble for American agriculture. And it's not as strong a saying as it used to be decades ago, but as agriculture goes, so goes the economy of the country.
Well, and the thing is, most of us eat. Do you eat? Are you going to eat today?
I eat a lot. I eat too much every day. Yep.
Dave, how about you? Are you planning on eating today?
I am planning on eating, yes.
Maybe okay, Vanderbilt, you going to eat today?
Of course. Love to eat.
Okay. I can't ask Grzanich because he's away from his mic eating.
Eating, yeah.
So point being, since everybody eats, why are we the country that takes agriculture for granted? Because the Chinese president, when he comes in, he doesn't take agriculture for granted. Other countries don't take agriculture for granted. What do we need to do? What do we need to have as a wake-up call here to start taking care of business a little better?
Well, we need to walk into a supermarket and find empty shelves. And we need to walk into a supermarket and find prices that are triple what they are right now. And that would be the wake-up call. I'll never forget my first trip to Russia when I went to a grocery store. They didn't have a supermarket, but they had a grocery store, and I went there to take a look at it with our TV crew, and the people were standing in line outside the store waiting to get in to buy whatever they would be allowed to buy that day. And I'll tell you, that was the wake-up call for me. You know, when's the last time we stood in line waiting for a supermarket to have the food that we're looking for? So I just don't know. You know, I've been trying to tell this story of agriculture for 56 years on WGN radio, and there are times when I look at some of the emails I get and some of the propositions put forth by people who have no understanding of what it takes to put food on the table and now clothes on our back and a roof over our head and energy in our tank, have no understanding at all of what it takes to do that. So
it's frustrating.
All we can do is keep working.
Hey, Orion, I have one for you. So we had kind of a strange winter, not a lot of snow, and very wet week this week, which I guess is typical for end of March, early April. How will all of this affect our crops in Illinois?
Well, a little early to tell, but it's always good to start a growing season with a good supply of soil moisture in the ground. And so we'll take all the moisture we can get because, as they've said for decades on the floor at the Board of Trade, rain makes grain. And so I think at this point, we've got the moisture supplies we're looking for, and I think we'll get off to a good start. But other parts of the world, Brazil this morning reporting again that their soybean crop, which is now being harvested, will be a record high crop this year. And so that makes the competition a little tougher out there in the world. But I think, you know, weather is very fickle because it can change in an instant. But right now, I'd say we're looking like pretty good shape.
Good to talk to you.
Incidentally, I have to send greetings to you from the folks at Tutti Santi. We had dinner there last night.
There you go.
Yes.
And I tell you what, the difference in the weekend, you couldn't get reservations in most of the restaurants in the Valley last week because of the Final Four.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And everything else. Last night, we walked into Tutti Santi, the quietest night they've had since last summer.
There you go.
Because the snowbirds are gone, spring training is over, Final Four is over, and so what a difference that makes when the people go back to the homes, wherever they might be.
And then they sat down with you and had dinner.
Yes. Yeah, right.
Said, here's yours, let's eat together. Well, good. I'm glad you saw them. They're great people, and glad you're feeling better as well. And thanks for the education, as always. Stand by. More coming up. We'll get a Hockopedia with Dave in here. Teach us a little hockey before Bill and Wendy. That's next on 720 WGN.
The Blackhawks!
Blackhawks Radio.
720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show presents Hawk.
Chicago.
Hockopedia.
We may get a fracas here before it all ends.
A what?
Talkopedia is sponsored by Freshwave. Remember their slogan, if it stinks, it's our problem. It's time now for Dave to tell us what we need to know.
We've talked a little bit about the President's Trophy, which carries with it home ice throughout the playoffs.
Right.
Blackhawks have already wrapped up.
It's a trophy in the shape of Donald Trump's head.
No, it's not. Oh. But the Blackhawks have already wrapped up the Central Division title, top seed in the West. The President's Trophy, which goes to the team with the best overall record, has home ice throughout the Stanley Cup Final. With 107 points, three games left, the best the Hawks can do is 113 points if they win all three. Meantime, Washington is leading the league with 112 points. That means if Washington wins just one of its four remaining games, the Hawks can't catch them. So it's going to be tough for the Hawks to win the President's Trophy, but do they really want it anyway? Since the President's Trophy was established in the 1985-86 season, Hawks have won it twice, 1991 and 2013. That time, they did win the Stanley Cup. However, the Hawks were the last President's Trophy winner to also capture the Stanley Cup. In fact, of the 30 teams which have won the President's Trophy, only 27% have gone on to win the Cup. Eight teams out of 30, and only two of the last nine, the Hawks in 13 and Detroit in 2008. Washington, on the other hand, has won the President's Trophy twice, got knocked out in either the first or second round both times.
It's a curse. It's a curse.
There are a lot of people who feel that way, Steve.
It's a curse of the President's Cup.
Hawks likely won't win the President's Trophy, and it should not bother them one bit.
Nope. It's the curse of the President's Cup. The Hawks don't want the trophy. All right, a couple minutes before 10. Thank you for the lesson.
You're welcome.
Very much appreciated. Mm-hmm. By the way, I don't want to make you guys nervous, but the president of the company is outside the window right now.
Oh, I see. He's watching us.
Yeah, he's watching us.
He's signifying that he's watching.
Someone has to watch us, for gosh sakes.
Yeah, we're not on CLTV.
I just wish he'd get an office. Yeah, poor guy wanders around all day. Hi, Larry. A couple minutes before 10 on 720 WGN.